If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
This week's episode of Game Dev Unchained is sponsored by us. That's right. This one is for all the students and new hires in the game development industry. We've compiled all of our career tips and secrets into a must-have guide called Game Dev Unchained Game Industry Survival Guide. This 10-chapter book breaks down the most important steps that you need to really get your career going. So if you love our podcast, you definitely want to check out our book. It's available today on Amazon. All right. Thanks, guys. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, all over the world, the globe, and international, it is that weekly podcast. This is The Voice, Larry Charles, one half of the hosting team, and the other half, fresh off of his tour promoting Beachbody by Brandon, Mr. Brandon Pham.
Hey, ready to work out this week with me, Brandon Pham, and please welcome our fan favorite, I'm declaring it, you've been here long enough, Raymond Gran.
He's the third podcast host. Yeah, what's up, Ray? Third podcast. How's it going, buddy?
How you guys doing? I'm good.
So this episode, well, if you haven't read the title, is our monthly roundtable. And in this type of episode, we talk about what's hot, what's not last month for the month of January. Disclaimer, I think we were big enough that we have to say that this only reflects our own opinions and not our companies that we work for or anyone else. These are opinions. We're not reporters. We're literally picking news off the headlines and having opinions on them. So don't get mad. Yeah. Take it or leave it, all right?
Yeah, okay. I don't want any more emails.
Yeah, no more emails. Or just turn us off. Not really. Just turn it lower. Anyways, first topic, and you can't bypass January without talking about Oculus ZeniMax lawsuit.
Yeah.
So a little info, obviously ZeniMax filed a lawsuit after Oculus got bought by Facebook. Everyone, of course, is siding with Facebook at first, but more details regarding how John Carmack kind of and a bunch of employees kind of jumped ship. So ZeniMax is obviously pissed. Their stance is that, you know, this is 15 years of research that Oculus kind of took and ruined NDA and all these trade secrets that turned it into a lawsuit, right? So they are asking for $2 billion $2 billion plus another $2 billion for reasons. I'm not even sure. It's just like damages.
$2 billion for pain, yeah. $2 billion for suffering.
Yeah. For $4 billion they're asking for.
Yeah, it was something like $2 billion for actual damages.
Yes.
And then another $2 billion for punitive damages.
There you go. So what you do is, and I told Larry this, is you ask for $4 billion and then you get $500 million. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
So Jesus. If you haven't read the news, ZeniMax got a settlement, right? Or not a settlement. They got an award of $500 million for not trade secret reasons, but for Facebook or Oculus ruining the NDA or violating it. So what are you guys' thoughts on this?
Well, the thing is, I thought it was that they actually found that Oculus didn't misappropriate trade secrets, but it's just the effect of the talent poaching, I thought, was most of what happened, right? Like, weren't there a lot of counts that went against them and they actually were able to defend successfully most of them?
Yeah, well, I didn't read the actual verdict or anything like that, but from what I understood, they got awarded that money. And it wasn't the full, like, it was, what was it? Palmer Luckey has to pay $50
million. Yeah.
Brian Ebrey, however you pronounce his last name, the CEO has to pay $150 million. Damn. And then Facebook has to come up with the other $250 million.
Yeah.
Right. From what I understood, it was for NDA.
Yes.
Violations.
It's NDA.
And not for trade secrets. But it was kind of funny though. Like the Oculus, one of their PR people had a reaction to it and was like, you know, we, you know, the we have been found, you know, innocent of misappropriating trade secrets, but we, you know, we still have to pay $500 million. Like, it was almost like they're counting it as a success, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of funny, but you know, yeah, if somebody's asking for $4 billion and you have to, and you're only breaking out away with $500 million,
yeah,
that's,
you know,
yeah, that's less of a loss, I'll say.
Yeah.
Not enough to call it a win, but less of a loss. What worries me is, like, I was saying this to Brandon earlier, is like, I'm worried about where that money is going to come from, right? So, like, it's easy to say Facebook money, and it's easy for them to say, oh, the CEO has access to this or access to that. But the Oculus program, in its infancy, all it's done so far has been a cash dump, right? I don't see Oculus is flying off of store shelves. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see the consumer saturation point where I would even think that investing that much more money into the program is going to just get returned somewhere, unless we're talking 5-10 years down the line.
Well, it's interesting you're saying that, because it is totally a long-term play, right, for Facebook, right? And like, and just as this verdict went down, I asked somebody, I was like, oh, so how much did they buy Oculus for again?
Mm.
Right, they told me $2 billion. Yeah, it's like $2 billion, right? And so 150 million is the cost of doing business. So it's like, what, 10% fee or whatever, like, like, all right, whatever, right? You know, what I mean? Like, in the grand scheme of how much money they've already spent, it's really not that much, right?
Well, what about the CEO's 150 million? That's
but that dude.
What about him?
But okay, first of all, that dude would probably be, you know, he's not happy about it for sure. And Oculus already, sure. Oculus already said that they're going to be appealing, right? But that guy's already, he's a CEO, and he's been a CEO of other different companies, and he's already kind of damn near a billionaire, right? So, like, you know, he doesn't have to bust open his piggy bank to get the money. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not that big of a deal, right? And I think the money is actually more of a deal for Zenimax than, say, for any of those guys.
Oh, Zenimax just got out of bankruptcy.
And it is a loss for Oculus and everyone else.
Yeah. That's what I think of these.
That's a good year for Zenimax.
Zenimax doesn't need to do anything else.
They just made GTA money by whining. I don't know. It's kind of hard to, like, in a weird situation, Facebook's kind of the underdog. Like, everyone's kind of rooting for Facebook. It's like, it feels like a cash grab. Obviously, in the case, you know, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. And there were some mudslinging, of course, you know, Zenimax saying this and that about how they're using their talent to make this better. And, you know, Palmer Luckey wasn't talented enough to come up with this on his own. So he had all this help from the Zenimax employees, or John Carmack, to be exact and specific about it. And I'm sure at some point, you know, there was some sharing, but in the end, John Carmack on the stand said they didn't use any of his code. You know, their Oculus guy's code was better. He was just excited as a guy and wanted to support it. So it's really difficult to exactly say that Facebook was completely guilt-free. Who knows, you know, what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess both sides are happy.
The way that I look at it, though,
in a way.
Yeah, Facebook still has the talent, and that's what they care for. They still have the goose that lays the golden eggs. So even with the 150, I think they'll still come out on top. I just, as a dollar value today, I asked that 150, I don't know where that 150
500, is. 500 million, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for correcting me. Yeah. 500 million, even worse.
That's a lot.
Well, it's 500 million from all of those guys, right?
Sure.
But it's Facebook has to come up with $150 million.
Yeah, that's like 2 hours for them. I mean, come on. Let's give me 2 hours of Facebook's ads.
Some ad revenue right there. Like, what, a month ad revenue?
Some tax write-offs.
It's still, I look at it as 25% of the, I guess, monetary on paper value of the product that they acquired has now just been added onto it.
Yeah.
Well, it just became 25% more expensive.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you would think, though, at this point, Oculus's valuation should be higher than how much Facebook initially paid for them, right? Because they've actually shipped the product. Also they shipped the touch controllers, you know.
They've done
some things. Right. Still, I think the valuations are just made up anyway for the most part. Right. But yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like Tidal's now worth $600 million out of nowhere. Yeah. I thought that they were worth $200 million from Sprint and then maybe $15 million from whatever else was left over.
Yeah. It turns out companies are worth whatever people are willing to pay for them, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is Zuckerberg.
I guess that's everything.
Zuckerberg better like double down on that VR social avatar clothing wear. Like they need to start pumping out more clothes for those little avatars they came up with. Because yeah,
well, I mean, change
if,
my top.
Yeah, if they're going long term, man, who knows when they're going to make $500 million just from Oculus, right? Just return on investment.
The problem that I have with long term is these devices are already expensive to make, and this is the first iteration, and it's taking a lot of time, a lot of research, and a lot of money to put it together. 10 years from now, I don't think that the same Oculus is going to be able to survive, because who knows what kind of technological changes or advancements are coming our way that they're going to have to adapt, you know?
Well, yeah.
That's what worries me.
Yeah, they're not sitting there at the Facebook headquarters just working on the old-ass technology, right? They're working on the next stuff. There's stuff that's coming out next, right? So
yeah, but that's what I'm saying. So, this is a non-essential device to me, right? Like, a cell phone I can see as an essential device. This is a non-essential device. And so I'm worried about, like, hey, guys, here's the new Oculus that's 1300, 1700.
Yeah.
You know, that's.
I think, yeah. They want to get to that point where they're like, here's the new thing that's integrated into this device that everybody already has. Yeah. That's why whenever John Carmack talks about VR, he always talks about mobile, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like that's where they think the money is at, right?
Yeah.
So they just want to keep pushing that way.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they're working on, you know, Google came out with the Android and have their Pixel phone now. I wouldn't be surprised if Facebook gets into mobile with the Oculus as their mobile device of some sort, you know.
Yeah, well, they already took a stab with the Gear VR.
Right, they're testing, I think.
Yeah.
But eventually, I think they're going to back it with this is our mobile device, you know.
Right.
These are your avatars. You know, Facebook is like this, the center operating system of everything, and
yeah
or
even here's this new crazy Facebook AR thing all of a sudden out of the
exactly
blue, right? Like, you know.
Yeah,
I'm actually surprised that Facebook went VR before AR. I thought Facebook would have done a lot better with an AR offering, because it seems like an overlay of the world, right, with more information and plugins to connectivity would have been actually a stronger suit for them to play.
Yeah, but I think as with anything, AR is hard. You know, it's hard, and so the VR was just it's just easier to do the VR first. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Right? Yeah.
Well, Facebook, if you're listening to Game Dev Unchained podcast, Mark Zuckerberg, I hope you guys have an AR division and you're investigating it. And thanks for supporting, by the way. Feel free to tweet us.
Yeah. Well, I mean that's. I mean, that settles it. I was very surprised on the verdict. I didn't really think they'd get any money, to be honest. This is very surprising that they actually got $500 million, which is a victory.
Yeah.
Victory dance. I'm sure at some point they were like, are you sure we should do this? You know, it's like what's the worst thing that can happen? We get $500 million, right?
That law firm is like, they are getting their upgrades. What did they get, like 4%, 5%, something like that?
Dude, $500 million is a lot of money. To everyone that isn't Facebook, that is a lot of money, man. Everybody would be happy.
Yeah, like I was surprised too, right? But like, I guess like I haven't been following that case. I don't know what the hell evidence was put forward, right? So you know.
Yeah, I mean, there were some interesting facts. You know, they had these meetings. Yeah. They were talking about at some point the Brendan Irvin. The CEO of Oculus, right? Was under oath, was saying how during one of the meetings with the execs at ZeniMax, they were straight up calling them kids. You know, you guys should be lucky that you've been in a meeting with us. Like, so you can see that type of, you know, elderly kind of condescending attitude towards, like, what are you guys talking about?
Yeah.
You're lucky to even be in this room with your toy. So I can see that. Like, and then suddenly it being bought by Facebook with $2 billion. That's the biggest fuck you letter that got. So, like, bitterness, right? It's like, oh, yeah, fuck you. You know? We're going to see your ass. So.
Like, yeah. And I think, ZeniMax has, like, kind of a reputation of being douchebaggery like that, right? Yeah. So when the lawsuit happened, everybody just assumed, oh, yeah, it's ZeniMax being douchebags again, right?
Yeah.
And it turns out ZeniMax got awarded $500 million.
It pays to be a douchebag. I mean, they definitely went for it and got it, man. So
it's still to be determined if they actually received the money.
Yeah.
But
we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, it's true. If this first case, the jury has awarded $500 million and they've given everyone the payouts. But if an appeal goes through and it gets overturned or if it gets amended, you know, it could be completely different. So at this point, actually, no money has changed hands.
Still, dude, like ZeniMax going there all threats now has $500 million. You know, they're going to come in all cocky, man. It's like,
well, it's in accounts receivable, though.
Yeah.
It's an accounting.
Yes.
All right. So, I mean, that's pretty much Oculus last month. Crazy. It was like in a span of 3 weeks when it started and when it ended. It literally ended like at the end of January. So that was the verdict. I think it surprised everyone.
Yeah, but I'm still shocked.
Pretty shocking. Well, anyways, January was another month where Nintendo Switch unveiled a little bit more about their Wii remote controllers that you can connect. I mean, pretty much it's like Wii Remote controller on iPad.
Oh man, yeah. they hate already.
No. Hey, I'm gonna say it, I actually like it. Like I think they haven't unveiled everything about the system. You know, they haven't really talked about the touch screen stuff capability. I'm assuming it works like an iPad. They haven't really shown the gameplay mechanics with it, but I like the idea. This is something that I've been noticing, right? At least with the game industry and analog game industry, like a lot of people are so apart from each other, where you're seeing like this move towards board games again. Like you see all these Kickstarters, if you pay attention to it, these card games are getting Kickstarted like crazy, and I see them at Target now and stuff. What? And so I think the Switch, if they've done their marketing research or something, is seeing this trend back to the party gathering thing. The success of the Wii was based on family get together and just hanging out with each other. So I think that's what they're capitalizing on. And I think I think they're actually going to do it, man. Like it's the pre-orders from the last I heard is sold out. Like you can't find it anywhere right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand the nostalgia for in-person, you know, social entertainment, right? Like we have done a lot of, you know, play Xbox Live or get the PS Network and play Call of Duty from your house by yourself with a headset with other people across. Like, yeah, sure, we had connectivity, but we didn't actually have that in person. So like you said, Cards Against Humanity, right, was a big statement. This is just paper with words on it, and people are going nuts over this game because it's a lot of fun to play with people in person. Mm-hmm. And if that's what Nintendo is trying to do, like I'll give them credit for trying. Mm-hmm. And I'll say I like the idea of the Switch because I've been waiting for a long time for gaming on the go, where my game at home is my game at the bus stop is my game at work. I don't know if the Switch is too late. I think this effort is a little too late, is my opinion.
What do you think, Ray?
I just have a question, though. Sure. First of all, both of y'all sound like a bunch of haters.
But, no.
But also, my question is, a little too late for what? And compared to what?
So a little too late in this first sense. I don't like that they've launched so far away from when PS4 and the Xbox One come out, so that the chance of there being parity between games is a lot lower. They're going to have a lot of first party stuff. But like if I were to say, man, which one should I get, the PlayStation, the Nintendo, or the Xbox? PS4 and Xbox have already had a lead, right? I'm already kind of committed to a platform. Mm-hmm. So I'm now making the decision. Do I want another video game platform? Or do I stick with what I have versus them coming out at the same time, companies being able to say, I can make one game that goes on all three systems. So that's one part of them being a little late, is just being kind of behind the big two. It more or less means they're doubling down on their own first party stuff, or people who are small enough that being third party only for Nintendo is still a viable business option.
Right.
The Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, like, but now, you know, nowadays, like, or even back in the day, right, there was a difference between PS3 hardware and Xbox 360 hardware, PS2 hardware, Nintendo 64. There's all these different platforms, right? And I think, like, comparing the Switch to, like, PS4 or Xbox 3 or Xbox One is just ridiculous, right? Like, it's way, way underpowered compared to those boxes, right? So that whole comparison is kind of like you just can't even factor it into the equation, really, right? Because and on top of it, the price that you're selling it at is way less than what it costs to buy any of those other boxes, right? So it's like a cheaper price. If those boxes are kind of expensive, then maybe go for the cheaper one. And then on top of it, they have the games, right? So they have, you know, their flagship titles that are always dope. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, you can't tell me you saw Mario and we're like, oh my God. Or you see Zelda and you're like, oh my God, like that looks dope. Like, it looks really good, right?
You can always count on them with their games. I think this is where Nintendo's standing, right? And it's funny that you're talking about the third publisher stuff. Like, they actually just announced, like, 100 publishers are creating games for the Switch. Like, people have signed on and are really excited about their platform. So, at least compared to the Wii U only had 150 games or something, or publishers or something like that. And they're already almost eclipsing that. So they're off to a good start. And I feel like Nintendo right now is like in a fuck it mode. Like, they kind of know that they're behind. And they know they're not, as far as parity goes, they're never going to want to. They made that a statement. Like, we're not going to try to match the other systems, right? We know we're not in that department.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to make it that expensive. So, and the fact that they're launching in March, too, right? Those systems usually launch around Christmas, and they're launching in March. They have a Super Bowl ad. Like, I think at least with the Wii, right? The really successful system. Besides,
have you seen? Because I just watched the Super Bowl ad before we were recording this.
Yeah,
and like that Super Bowl ad is dope. It is just done. Yeah. And like if you're sitting at home watching the Super Bowl with your whole family and you got friends over and everybody's over and you watch that ad is dope. That ad is really selling what they're going for. Like, yeah, totally. Right. It's hard to say like how successful it's going to be and all this kind of stuff. Right. Like, you don't have a crystal ball, but I know like at the price point,
it's a good price point. Yeah.
And at the games I see coming, it was a no brainer to pre-order it for myself. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Ray, has there been a console that came out in the last 10 years that you didn't pre-order?
Yes. I did not.
Just making sure.
I did not pre-order an Xbox One, nor did I pre-order a PS4.
Okay. But you have a PS4.
I was in line for a PS4, but I didn't pre-order a PS4.
I just wanted to make sure the data is correct. We're not.
Yeah, right.
So. Honestly, what it was like, oh, I don't need to get it right away. Oh, yeah. And then I was driving by the Best Buy, and I'm like, oh, the line doesn't seem very long. Yeah. And then I just got in the line. Like, that's how it went down.
That's how long it took. A line. And plus, this is Nintendo's curse and gift, man. Every other year or every other console, they kill it.
Yeah, so, they ebb and flow.
it's like, I think if there was a console that Nintendo could have came out with at this time, at this moment, especially with the trend of social gathering, this system seems to be the way to do it. Because even me as a father, like, I can see the value of me just playing games with my son. Just like, hey, let's just play stuff while mom's in the mall.
I give
like,
you that.
It's cool. That's cool.
I give you that. And it's, I'll say, like, it's like an iPad with two controllers, but that's good because then no one's touching the screen. No one's hands in the way. So you and your son playing games together, totally see it. I get it. 100%.
I think that's the target. And I think that's what they're aiming for.
Yeah,
we'll see. I mean, the pre-orders is better than Wii U, so it's sold out.
So group gaming is what they're going for, and niche gaming is what they're going for. Nintendo first-party stuff, pushed to the max. If you want to be a third party, you better be small. Good luck.
That is not niche. That is just games.
No,
that's
man.
Just game, no, man. That's game.
To me, Nintendo is niche.
Let's
put a PS4 on the table then.
but honestly, since we're talking about niche and all this kind of stuff, if you look at Xbox One, right?
Okay.
You look at the games that are on Xbox One, and you look at PS4, right? Now, if you want to talk about high fidelity graphics, right? PS4, and if you look at the games that they have on PS4, right? They have a huge indie support. They got Nier Automata. You said that Automata coming out. Mm-hmm. They got Neho. They got Gravity Rush 2 just came out. Like those are some like very, those are niche games, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why Sony's killing Microsoft right now, because they just got games and they show that they care about games, right? And that's totally Nintendo. That's totally Nintendo as well. They care about games, they care about gameplay.
No. Nintendo is totally games by us.
By Nintendo. Well, that's what I'm wondering. Like how big are they reaching out to indie developers to create it for their system? I mean, they're mostly gonna be online, right? They have memory on there, but like most of their games, they will have an online store that you can purchase games and stuff. Like how much easier are they going to make it for people like us to make games for them if you want?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, but that's what I'm wondering, because that would fix the third publisher problem. Like I mean, Unreal is already out there supporting for the Switch. Like if you have Unreal, you can port your games to the Nintendo Switch. So that's a good step forward. Like if I want to make a game for the Switch, if you're telling me and my friends can sit down and make one and play it on the Nintendo Switch and it'll be on their storefront, that's better than what they've ever done with their publishers.
Oh, all I have to say is Unity just support Nintendo Switch. Right. And you guys are on here hyping up Unreal. I'm just gonna say Unity supports.
That was my blanket statement. Out there. Of course, Unity Unreal, right?
Yeah.
But that's a huge step, in my opinion, of Nintendo, like seeing that we can fill up this roster other than Nintendo games. Like if they can really exploit that and really bait a lot of indie developers into their field and do that, mm-hmm. I think that will solve a lot of issues.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know about the dev kits or like how much they cost or what they are or anything like that. But I don't even know if you have any sort of indie dev program.
Right.
But I would believe if you have Unity and Unreal supporting you, then you want indies to come along. Right.
Yes. So I think 100%. The plan is in place. Their rollout, their at least pre-rollout isn't strong yet. Like they're not like, all right, if you want to develop, this is what you got to do. So it's going to be a little late.
Well, I'm sure
it's too strong to ignore anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure they want to get their online right
infrastructure stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, because that goes into something I read today. But supposedly the rumor is the price for their online service is going to
cheaper
be like,
than Sony and Microsoft.
Yeah, it's going to be like $20 or something like that, roughly
for the year.
Yeah. It's free until they have it up or something, right? Isn't it like free until September of next year? So everyone gets to go on it for free and then they start paying or something?
Yeah. Well, that tells me a couple of things, right? It tells me, you know, they want to try it out. They want to get it. They want to see if it's right. But they also know that they're nowhere near providing the value that PSN or Xbox Live support provides. So.
But really, like when you think about it, all that you expect, or maybe it's just me, I just want to be able to go online and play games against other people. Mm-hmm. I'm not really excited about too much more. Maybe the games for gold, like, oh, you're a member, here's the free game that you get this month or whatever. That's hit or miss for me. But I just want to be able to go online and play games against other people.
Yeah.
Right. And that used to be completely free.
Yeah.
Now it's $49.99, you know?
Yeah.
So they can entice me with 20.
You're playing what is it? Heroes? What is it? Heroes of the Storm? Whatever.
Oh yeah, oh, I'm playing HOTS now. It's free, free.
That's the PC consoles. Yeah. Don't play it like that. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't charge PC players to play online. They'll freak the hell out.
Yeah,
somehow paying for MMOs was a thing for some reason. Anyway,
it's just being smart.
See, man, you got to take it there, dude. I just was talking about Sony and Microsoft. Got to bring up my old addictions in front of all our friends.
I'll
say this.
Yeah.
$20 to play online for the year is a substantial price point, even if the offering is different, because I'm sure there's a lot of people with consoles for like the bells and whistles don't really impress me. I just want to be able to go online and play Halo against other people. And then that's it. Like add them to my friends list and play them. That's it. You know, so paying $20 for that, that sounds great if I'm used to paying $49.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think they're very smart with their pricing, and I think they're very smart further disassociation with from Sony and Microsoft. Like they're like not even competing with them at all. Yeah. Releasing in March, which is a huge open window for them to sell their consoles.
It's smart. What I want to know is how come my iPad doesn't work like a Switch? Like how come Apple didn't just see those commercials and say, "Oh, dope, let's do that," right? And just here are your controllers for your iPad. Here's your docking station. Next day, Nintendo Switch competition.
I think the comparison is like the difference between a Fitbit and an Apple Watch. It's like people buy the Fitbit to work out. And so people buy the Nintendo Switch just to play the games and all these accessories. Nintendo noticed that iPad is not going to create these type of controllers at all for it. And people who buy it, it's hard to message to them. Like, it's not the core audience that they want to.
I guess that's where it hurt is because they're so open and flexible and accessible by all different types of developers. It's hard for them to say this is a standard uniform controller for our device.
Yeah. Well, they you know, Apple supports Bluetooth controllers, but they're like $100 a pop, right? And so, and it just becomes ridiculous, right? Yeah. And honestly, like at the resolution, sorry, forget all the technical stuff. Like Apple just doesn't seem to care too much about video games as much as they really should. And there's some people internally that care a lot about video games, but there's like when they show some video game stuff on the keynote, it's kind of like, yeah, look at this video game stuff. Okay, let's move on. Right. You know, like they have no interest whatsoever.
You guys get a slide. All right.
They must have some very impressive charts in the hardware and app market to look at the video game sales and app sales for games to look at that as like minuscule. Oh, judging by Ray's face.
I don't think they'll take the money.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. But when it comes to like, let's make an actual video game platform. They're like, why?
I don't even think that iPad people are even looking for a video game platform. The iPad Pro, the new iPads are quite powerful. I've seen the applications that those things are running. Yes. And I'm not going to lie. You give it to plain Jane or average Joe, like, hey, play my iPad game. Now play this Nintendo Switch game. I mean, they're probably not going to be able to like discernibly say, oh, this is better. It's better, you know?
Yeah. The only difference, the one thing about Nintendo that they, like when it docks, supposedly it will upclock the GPU, right? It's because they will have more headroom to burn off heat and all that kind of stuff, right? So like when it's docked, it's probably going to be kind of pretty way more beastly than say an iPad. But then when you're carrying it around, it's probably iPad quality. It's Tegra. What is it? Tegra X1 is the GPU. So that's, you know, or that's the rumor that what the GPU is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm pretty excited. Like I think once people see like a gathering of 2-3 people with those things, with a Switch and they're playing and having fun. It's
Anime Expo.
Yeah. It's like, just imagine when you saw the guys in the lounge playing the Wii, right? Mm-hmm. When you saw it, it looks fun. It looked cool. Kind of like what the virtual reality stuff is starting to do, but it hasn't really capitalized yet. You see it at the malls and stuff and display, but you haven't really seen too many people out there with VR headset. I can see the Switch being more accessible. Like, you'll see it more on the college campuses. You'll see it more in outside, you know, people in the park. I really do see people just hanging out and just playing with it on the picnic table. And I think that's when it's going to catch fire.
Well, my worry about that is, like, when I think about gaming on the go, like, my requirement, and maybe I'm just this type of guy, but I want it to fit in my pocket so that it's convenient to carry around. It's not, you know, bulky. I don't have to worry about the dongle from the controller catching my pocket as I pull it out, or catching lint and things like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I've been a big fan of, like, the PSP size. Like, that to me was like, this is what I would consider triple A level gaming on the go, right? Mm-hmm.
I know you're a big dude. And I know you must have some big pockets, but PSP can't fit no pocket.
What are you talking about? I'll go get mine right now. I'll tell you this, man. You can't fit an iPad in a pocket. You can't
fit that's for sure. That's for sure. Maybe a PSP Go. Maybe the PSP Go could fit your pocket. Original PSP.
Dude, I wear Junkos, man. Junkos.
Yeah.
No, but really that's the travel. That's my big concern.
Yeah. I'm not
exactly. It's like,
how do you
will portability thing actually be something that is a detriment for this? Even though it's supposed to be gaming on the go, it's like a that is a hefty looking piece of hardware.
It's like a rob me now.
Pause.
For me, you know, my back, I have a bag and it fits my laptop, and I have an iPad mini in there.
So you're good.
So a Nintendo Switch taking place of the iPad Mini is not a big deal.
At least for me. Yeah, I haven't really seen the size yet. It's pretty iPad Mini size, right?
I just watched a commercial and somebody was holding it, and it looked like iPad Mini size.
Because it's about. From what I've seen, it reminds me about this.
Yeah.
To those who can't see it, I held up a book that was big as fuck.
Yeah, you're not complaining about carrying books, man. I'm sure you are.
It looks light. It looks light. It looks portable. Yeah.
It's probably light. And then the controllers are more bulky than they are heavy, I would imagine, you know.
Controllers and we're talking about portability, something pops into my head for people like me and you. Those controllers look mad tiny.
Yeah.
Right. That's the one issue that I have. They look really, really small.
They're gonna add.
They look like cord. Remember when they made those?
But of course they have
those micro Game Boys. The like Game Boy Micro, they look like Game Boy, like a little bigger than the Game Boy Micro.
Yeah, but of course, you could buy a Pro controller, right? Mm-hmm. And it would be fine. But like those base controllers, they look really, really small.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm curious what you guys look like with those ridiculously small controllers.
It looks bad. You know how tough it is to explain how cool you are at some game, and they're just laughing at how hard it is for you to hit the buttons.
Yeah. It looks really small. Yeah,
I got to get my hand on it. That's the thing where they always have it in the holidays, because then they have it at the E3s, at the GDCs, so people can actually touch it and play around. Besides press.
Yeah.
So in March, it's either go to GameStop to check it out or something like that. Well, speaking of GameStop, Larry, do you want to introduce our next topic?
Sure. So GameStop is kind of hot in the press right now for an expose that was, I guess, kind of leaked anonymously internally to news sources that the GameStop program leads employees to fabricate information about their stock because there's this new quota system that they have. GameStop looks at all their stores and say, you should do, you know, like, and I'm paraphrasing here, like 30% should come from new retail, 30% should come from used, 30% come from accessories and like add-on subscription, that kind of stuff. And if your numbers start to askew, even if you're doing well, if your numbers start to askew, it's looked at as a bad thing, right? If you don't maintain your 33 across the board, you're doing wrong, right? The manager will get in trouble. Employees will get in trouble. They actually keep score on the individual employees per sale. So like if someone comes in and buys a brand new Xbox One and they don't sell them, then what would that be? It's like 300. So that would be $60 worth of used stuff along with that Xbox One. That employee is in trouble, even though they just added $300 of revenue to, you know, your daily receipt.
You know what that sounds like, right? They are dying. Yes.
Well,
and they're killing.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, it's already been reported, right? That
year over year,
their numbers are going down year over year. Mm-hmm. Like, why is anybody still going to GameStop, like, for real though, right? And like that place, like, this news, if anybody's surprised that GameStop is shady, it's like, come on now. Like, we knew they've been shady for like a long time. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And especially as game developers, most game developers are not big fans of GameStop and use game resales and all that kind of stuff, right? So it's just like, it's like they just need to die off.
And damn, right. So this is what I've been telling.
On to the next one.
Yeah, I've been telling Larry about this for a long time. Like, GameStop. So the other day I went to GameStop, right, in one of their stores, just to check out some stuff. Just
walking. Why?
I was waiting for my wife, and there was a GameStop, so I'm going to the GameStop. It was surprisingly somewhat crowded. Maybe that GameStop is special, but there's something about, you know, the social gathering aspect of it, like we were talking about earlier. It's a cool place where mm-hmm. gamers can hang out. Like, I don't think they're capitalizing mm-hmm. on that at all. Like, they're not promoting competitions. They're not doing local cool stuff, like get into game development, you know, more about the games. If they just change their thinking and view of what their stores can represent, since they have so many spread throughout the United States, right, they can really do something fun to, I mean, honestly, you just got to think of ways to keep people in their stores and create this kind of like environment for gamers to hang out if they don't want to be at home. Like, where else would you do that? I mean, the idea of Best Buy before was like, oh, I'll sample some games, right? You go to Best Buy, you sample some games. And not everyone has access to this. If they start setting it up like an arcade or something, you know, like if you, I don't know, if they really want to make money, they have all these games, they have these all these systems, just set up the systems and games and just pay, you know, make people pay hourly to play games. Like, I would hang out, you know, for test out games.
Yeah, that's that idea. There's a bunch of like game cafes, especially exactly. in Toronto where I'm from, there's a bunch of game cafes that people just go play games, pay 30 minutes, pay some money per every 30 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
It's
popular for a reason. It's just so funny to me that they can't make that connection. It's not like they're buying any more stuff. Like, all their stuff is there. They just need to connect it to an outlet. It's just so funny that they don't jump to that conclusion. Instead of what, like a year ago, they were talking about going to indie publishing. It's like, what the fuck? You have like no, you have no experience. You sell games. What are you doing publishing games for? You're, it's like far left.
And honestly, like, I used to hang out in GameStop all the time, right? Way back in the day. But now, like, I go in there, it's like super depressing. All I see is pure games, and all of the new stuff is like behind the counter or behind some glass. So you have to ask specifically for the new, like, that place is just shady at this point. Like, it's just done. And
if they keep going that way, they are done.
Yeah, we just gotta keep moving.
They need some new blood. So hopefully, I don't know. I still think there's value to, especially now when everyone's in their home playing games. It's like there's value to these type of places where they can open it up and be like, hey, gamers, you like games? Well, this week we're talking about Final Fantasy. So Final Fantasy fans coming. I mean, Comic-Con, you know, E3 is getting bigger than ever. People like being surrounded by like-minded people. And if you can make that year-round, you know, that's kind of cool. I don't know. GameStop guys. Hire me. I can fix it.
And screw the GameStop guys. See, that's a business idea for us right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully, I don't know. I think it sucks. I kind of don't want to see them go because I grew up with GameStop. I had a lot of fun with my friends there. And I just think they need to fire some people and make some decisions, man.
I'll just say this, man. Everything that I could want to do at GameStop, I can do somewhere else and more things there. And that's just the biggest problem.
Yeah.
Like, if I want to get a game today, GameStop isn't the only place that I could go to do that, yep. right? Like, if right. I want to check out accessories, if I want to buy any of the stuff there besides used games,
yeah.
I mostly can go anywhere else.
And that's that was the crazy thing. Like, back in the day, if you wanted a game on release, you had to go to GameStop.
Yep.
And now, yes. game on release, I could get that Best Buy. I could get that Amazon. Amazon, it will come to my door. I don't have to leave the house on day of, right? It'll show up, right? So yes. I don't see the point. At all. Yeah.
All right. I mean, sorry, GameStop, but rest in peace.
All right. So before we end this segment, then and this is probably not very friendly at all, but when do you think the nail in the coffin will be for GameStop? If you're gonna call it now, when and why?
Dude, for them to year after year report losses, and now they're in the business of like
high pressure sales.
Well, like just fucking with numbers. Like, what would they? I think they're on their last year or two, dude.
Okay.
Especially with people, if their main business is buying or selling games, right? Yeah. Every console has their own game store. Like, what is the point of going there anymore?
I wouldn't say completely gone, but maybe 2 years you get a news story about so many stores closing down.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. You know what I mean? And then like the slow decline. You know what I mean? Because I think just in general, like all of these retail brick and mortar places are probably going to just dead off really, really soon.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think Best Buy's having their issues and GameStop's having their issues and Amazon is like just out here just trying to eat everybody's lunch. So like it's going to be rough.
Man, I guess commerce as a whole, right? I think is going to go through a big change. By the time my kids are old enough to play video games, I'm going to be telling them about when I could go to the mall and actually put my hands on products. All I see is movie theaters and restaurants, but everything else, Amazon online ordering is just going to kill brick and mortar as far as consumerism goes.
Yeah.
Hell, I don't know when.
Hell, even movie theaters are having a hard time right now.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's a totally different topic, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well.
It's going to be all VR, man. It's all VR.
You can have VR experiences of Blockbuster or GameStop. I want my movie collection to be a Blockbuster in VR, where I walk down the aisles and like pick out. Okay, that's a tangent. All right, I'm going to close this article. Brandon, do you want to take us through to the last one or the next one?
All right, the last one. We won't get too political, but we'll talk a bit about the Trump immigration ban. So, of course, pro-Trump or against Trump, we don't care. There's a ban going on that's affecting the tech industry. You know, you would hear Google and all these Silicon yes. Valley companies. They're already complaining about how half their employees are in trouble. Like,
yes.
you're keeping out a lot of smart people by doing this. And yeah. so, of course, our industry is affected by this because we have a lot of people with visas and from those countries
yes.
that are working in the... I mean, what are you guys' thoughts on this? Is this something of a long-term thing or what are the ramifications?
Well, so it's already clearly created problems for the United States. Stories of people getting, you have all these major airports, people protesting, people who can't see their family, who went away on a trip, who couldn't get back in when the ban went into place. Then you have the government itself fighting against other parts of the government to try to allow people back in, judges ruling against the ban. That in itself shows a dysfunctional, disorganized government. I'm not going to take it any politically further than that. I'm going to get back to the topic, which is it's fucked up for everybody in tech because we have people in the country who have visa, who have student visa, who are work visas, who don't have who aren't citizens yet, right? Their jobs, their ability to be able to help Google, to help AT&T, Johnson & Johnson, whatever company the hell they work for, not just the game industry, are in trouble. These people are worried about being able to see their family, about being able to travel home and come back, about being able to work remotely and have any sort of communication with the main branch. This is bullshit. It really is. All because of some speculation that a couple of people could be bad dudes. We're going to...
Bad hombres. Like bad hombres, man. Hombres.
This is... I don't get it, man. We're not helping anybody except for people who are afraid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, like, but I think like there's some bright side to it, which is basically there are people that are, well, people are
I'm just kidding.
People are challenging the constitutionality of it, right? Yeah, so, yeah. So a bunch of different states are suing. And you know, and so that process is going to go down, right? And some judge try to put a stay on the order, right? Mm-hmm. So hopefully that stuff will go down, but it still doesn't remove the fear that some people feel, right? And how it's going to impact the tech industry and all that, right? And then there's another rumor that there might be another executive order coming that might do something with H-1Bs, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right? And if that happens, man, like Google, Facebook, and Apple could be at the White House going like, "What's up?" Like they're gonna be real worried, right? Because a huge part of the tech workforce is definitely relying on H-1Bs. Mm-hmm. So like if that happened, it would be such a dislike. I can't even. Dude. Trump is kind of. He seems kind of crazy, but like that would be bananas, and it wouldn't really help America, put it that way.
Silicon Valley turns to Silicon Canyon, Silicon graveyard.
Yeah, and like it wouldn't be a good. It just wouldn't be a good idea at all, you know. And in light of it's funny in light of all this though, right? You know, I used to work at Ubisoft Toronto. Yeah. And in light of all this, there was Justin Trudeau. You are welcome here. You know, we are an inclusive country. Please come to us, right? Uh-huh. So like the other flip side is maybe Canada's video game scene, and tech scene, might an influx of people. And even if the Trump thing gets squashed and it's all good and it goes all back to normal, mm-hmm. right? People that are in other countries or on H-1Bs or whatever, and thinking about okay, where do I want to go work? Mm-hmm. They might think twice, you know what I'm saying, and go somewhere else.
It's the same on the other side, right? The hiring guys who, you know, the Google and Facebook, now they got to think about, is it a risk hiring people from out of country if this thing happens? Yeah. You know, production stops, literally.
Yeah. Well, it's already like those recruiters, man. Recruiters don't really like it when you need a visa. I'm talking like for first-hand experience. Yeah. Like for me, it's a little bit better because like I'm Canadian, right? So there's a special visa that I could get, like a NAFTA visa that's super easy to get, right? So when they're like, oh, do you need a visa? Yeah, yeah. You're from Canada though, right? Yeah, I'm from Canada. Oh, okay, fine. Like they're super happy about that. Mm. But like the H-1B process is very money consuming. And it's a lottery, right? There's not enough visas to go around. Mm-hmm. So like some people are left working in some foreign country for like a year while they wait for the H-1B to come through, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's already an arduous process, and then it's extremely vetted. It's funny, that's just recently I had my green card interview. Mm-hmm. And like they know everything about me. They have my fingerprints, they got pictures, they know everything about me, where I worked, where, you know, so like you're extremely vetted already. Mm-hmm. And just putting more stuff in the way is not going to have a positive effect on the businesses that rely on it.
Maybe that's the overall call, just to make it tougher, even knowing that it will be removed eventually. It's just like the damage is done somewhat.
Yeah.
Damn.
It's unnecessary, man.
Yeah.
Could you imagine, right? If you, it's February, so likely there's a lot of travel still happening around now. Maybe people returning to jobs, people going away to see snow, coming back and like, oh, no, sorry. You can't get back into this country.
Oh, dude, that's my greatest fear. Like, because I travel on a visa. I travel on a visa. So like, I know exactly. Yes. You go to the border, you talk to that guy at the border, and those guys are not the most friendly. right? Yeah. And so sometimes you get a good person, sometimes you don't, right? And then you sit there, you answer the questions, you're just like, please just say yes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and even though you get through every single time, right? It's not really a big issue, but it's still like, it's at their sole discretion whether they can just mess up your day, right? Mm-hmm. So I totally know all about that. Like, totally. Yeah.
And for people who can't relate, it's like when you're at the nightclub and you want to go outside to handle a phone call. So you go to the bouncer and like make a funny face like, ha ha, I'll be right back. And then you come back and he's like, oh, the line's over there. Man, you just saw me leave. I'm good. And like, nah, can't let you know re-enter. Got to get back in the line. And all your friends are inside having a great time. Mm. Shit sucks. Mm-hmm. It's a joke, but it's like, that's that's an easy way to explain.
You got to take the call in the bathroom, man.
And obviously, the whole thing about it too really just shows how people just don't understand the immigration process,
yeah.
And that like people coming to this country on visas, man, like they know everything about you except for like what your booty hole looks like. Like, I mean, you know, they know everything about you, man, and there's so much paperwork you got to send. They do background checks, you know, like. If you have documents that are not in the English language, you have to get the documents translated to English and notarized. And I mean, it's a process, right? Yeah. So for the fact that people think that, somebody could get through.
Just flashing a card.
Yeah. Just get on through and then come and do something in America. It's kind of like, nah, man. Like, I mean, the chance of it happening. Yeah, sure. It can happen, but the chance of it happening is mad low. So
I just look at it like there's already people here who are doing incredibly intolerable, hateful, racist, inhumane things. Like, we can't even solve that problem.
Yeah.
And to think, like, I want to excommunicate or extradite, I don't know how many millions of people are affected by this, right? Like,
well,
even if 99.9... Go ahead.
I was just saying that they're not going to actually throw anybody out that's here. Mm-hmm. But of course, like, you know, slippery slope, you can see that maybe being the next thing, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah, it's slippery slope.
At least they're not doing
that. You don't know what slippery slope means.
Yeah.
Not yet. You just said it. Not yet. This is the gateway.
I said at least they're not doing that yet. You know, at least.
Yeah, okay, not yet, dude. I'm
complete.
Yeah.
Japanese internment camp, World War II style.
So anyways, you know? This is the last interview that Ray's going to broadcast in America. I'll be working from Canada. I'll just say that.
Maybe like that 4-second delay like on TV. And now we go to Ray. Yeah, hey, we're here.
Yeah, that's scary, dude. Well, I mean, yeah. The tech industry is pissed. I mean, they're already thinking about... they're already reacting in a way where they're setting up base in Canada. Some of the Silicon Valley companies are already thinking about, all right, if this does happen, worst case scenario, we got to set up camp in Canada.
Well, like first of all of those companies already have offices in Canada.
Yeah.
Like all of them. Yeah. Especially like Facebook and Google have a huge ass campus, like right next to the school I used to go to in Canada. Like, I mean, they already got camp up there, right? So if they need to stash people, and they do, like when they apply for people's visa, they stash people in Canada, they stash people in other countries and wait for the visa to come through and then move into the States, right? Like, they're experienced at this. They know what they're doing. They got lawyers and they know what's up, right? And so that's why, you know, they made those statements or like, hey, you know, we're here for our employees, right? And they have experience with this stuff, right? So, but it's sad that people even have to do this stuff. You know, it's terrible.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, you kind of need the whole world to get the best, right? And thankfully, America has a lot of great companies that we're kind of turning our backs on if half of them are out of country and we're not allowing them back in. It's like, how is that helpful, guys? I don't know. I think hopefully this irons out. And
maybe the whole thing is a huge, elaborate effort to get all these tech companies to bring their foreign money back into the United States. You know?
I mean, that's, I'm sure that's, but that's the dude, thing, right? This is like, it's not that, that people are being like, it's not like their jobs are being taken from foreigners at Google, right? You're just unqualified, bro. Like, it's not suddenly now you can work at Google because people are not being able to get on, get past the gate. It's like, you're still not qualified. I don't know what people are doing. So I don't think it's not helping anyone, really.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the same old story, man. If you, if you're suffering, if you have an issue, if you see something happening to you, and you don't know what it is, or times are changing, automation is taking your job, or whatever is happening, and you don't know what it is, you know, time and time again throughout history, we always look at the immigrants and go, "It's you." That's what we do. That's what happens, you know. So
yeah, Rhee gets that look all the time, I guess.
All right. Oh well. Is it that time?
It is that time.
It is that time.
People.
Since I'm Larry Charles and I got the mic, feeling good, I'm saying goodnight.
Thank you for joining us this week. If you have any comments or anything, please email Rhee. Any complaints, give it to him. Any compliments, give it to us. This is Brandon Pham. See you guys next week.
Yes, guys. Thank you for having me on again. Much love, much respect. Peace.
If you enjoyed this podcast and you want to stay in touch or continue to follow our developments, then you need to go to facebook.com/GameDevUnchained and drop a like and stay in touch. You can also get the direct feed for this podcast on soundcloud.com/GameDevUnchained.